From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 Chai FM.
You're listening to 1.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the show on this Monday morning. Hope you are having a fantastic post-chag full week of work. I hope if you had been taking off the holidays, you will have not have done any work for October. And so now October is about to be over and you can get some work in November before, you know, the country closes in December. So that is what is going on in the world, and I hope that you're enjoying it. Especially hope you're enjoying the jacarandas. They're looking very spectacular this morning, in my humble opinion. But we have a great show, jacarandas or not, lined up for you today. And it's really going to be focused on the issue of foreign policy in our domestic life here in South Africa, because we have this situation where we have these fights over foreign policy that are just breaking out all over the place. And I think what we're going to try and do is break them down, look at them, see who, what are the factors, who's engaging in what, where, and how, and see if there's a pattern to all of this. Is there something else that's going on that we need to think about by joining the dots? Because I do think it's a very interesting space we're in at the moment. And I think it may have to do with a few things, but let's before we get into why, let's actually look at the what. What is going on and what are we going to be talking about over the next sort of 40 minutes, the different issues we're going to be covering. So the one is the issue of the Embassy of Taiwan, although it's not called the Embassy, I think it's called the Embassy of Taipei, and the push by South Africa to move it to Johannesburg. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about this kerfuffle over Russia, and whether it's an ally or not. So we've got China, we've got Russia. And then, of course, we have a lot of stuff going on to do with Israel and Iran, and that's another component to working. And then there's been a flurry of individual incidents in places that are not necessarily foreign policy based, but where this issue is coming up. So UCT is one of them. We're going to be looking at that. The Helen Suzman Foundation, that is another one where this is going on. And also Mandla Mandela having a few issues as well. And if we can try and connect a thread in all of that, then we will. But I'm not sure. All I can tell you is that there's a lot of fighting going on in the moment. There's clearly something that is moving. And I think the place to start, just because it might be, it seems to maybe be the next phase in what's going on here, is this question of, and then of course the ICJ, of course, but we'll be connected to that. But over the weekend, we did have Israel attacking Iran in a very sort of considerable fashion. I think it happened on Saturday night, and Israel sent in a number of planes over a period in the evening. The estimates I've seen may have been anywhere between one quarter, one third, maybe even a half of the Air Force was involved in this. And they spent an hour in Iranian skies across quite a broad swathe of the country, taking out various installations in Iran that had military purposes. And it's kind of an interesting question, because what were they trying to achieve? A lot of people, including I saw a tweet from Howard Feldman saying, well, you're not really sure what this was. Like, is that it? You know? So first of all, I think it's a remarkable feat militarily to fly across Iraq and Syria to get into Iran to do this in the first place. And everyone arrived and everyone came home. And that's also good. But it's also perhaps a twofold strategy, because on the one hand, there is a sense in which neither the Israelis nor the Americans just at this point want to have to take out the nuclear program of Iran. They're not looking for a regional war right now. They're still trying to handle Hamas in some respect in Gaza and also Hezbollah. But you can't have Iran firing the ballistic missiles like they did a couple of weeks ago. And so it looks like this particular event was aimed at targeting infrastructure in Iran to deter them, to try and stop them from coming back. Not clear to me that that's necessarily happened. It's certainly in the long term, maybe in the short term. But that it's also there for the purpose of degrading the Iranian defense capabilities. So a lot of these S-300s, which are Russian-made missile defense systems, they seem to have been hit and have been taken out. And on top of that, you also have a lot of the ballistic missile production processes, which are being ramped up by the Iranians over the last while. And so it will take them some time before they can make those as well. And that seems to have been the target. There was some symbolic targeting of places that were near the nuclear program. So basically, it seems to be, as some person has suggested, that the Israelis were trying to send a sort of very long WhatsApp in their attack on Iran. That was kind of the focus. What they're trying to do is get in a message to the Iranians. Look, you know, no one is looking for a ping pong. Stop fighting. You now are highly exposed in terms of the military capabilities of Iran, in terms of your defense systems. And if you carry on with this, then, you know, we will hit you much harder and we can do a lot more damage. And there's basically nothing the Iranians can do to stop the Israelis flying over their airspace and taking out various places. And it's also to your population, the Iranian population, which is not a big fan of the regime, it's sending a message to say that the regime is weak. But what it also does is it softens up the ground, so to speak, so that if the Israelis did have to do some sort of nuclear engagement, then the air defenses for that would be out the way. And the suggestion would be that if the Americans didn't want to be part of this discussion in a military sense, then the Israelis would have to do it themselves, and that would have to take over maybe a number of weeks or a number of months, sort of multiple bombing raids into Iran. It would take quite a lot of time. And for that to happen, you would need to make sure that the missile defense systems and the ability of the Iranians to fire the ballistic missiles were not on the table. So that seems to have been what the Israelis were trying to do. On the one hand, telling the Iranians to back off. On the other hand, creating a scenario in which they could come back and do it again, potentially for a longer period, and see where that goes. And I think that what you find when there is this kind of scenario going on is that if Israel does well, there's a lot of squealing and screaming and shouting. And I think we're starting to see that. And that's partly what's driving a lot of what is going on in South Africa at the moment. And that is what we're going to get into going up next here on the New Blue Review. I'm Benji Shulman. You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
We are talking today about how foreign policy is shaping a lot of debates here in South Africa. We'd love your views on it. You can SMS us 34519 or send us a WhatsApp, and I'll be very, very happy to take your viewpoints about what is going on. I think it would be nice to get your input as well as we wend our way through some of these key issues. Now, let's take one that we haven't spoken about. Oh, by the way, if you want to send the WhatsApp, it's 061-895-1019. I forgot to give you that number, 061-895-1019. Tell us what you think about these various issues that we are discussing. Let's talk about the Taiwan issue, because I think that one is something, not a debate that we've heard in this country for quite some time. And so it's worth discussing. just in case you are not up on your Far East Asia basics. So there's a war in the 40s and between the nationalists and the communists in China, and the nationalists end up losing the war, and so they flee to the island of Taiwan. And ever since then, China versus Taiwan has become quite a big issue in terms of the fact that the Taiwanese actually still claim that China belongs to them and China belongs to Taiwan, belongs to them. And over time, China has been pushing a big diplomatic effort to try and isolate Taiwan from the rest of the world, including in Africa, at the Olympics. So, for example, in the Olympics, the Taiwanese compete as Chinese Taipei. It's also, you know, the Taiwanese don't claim to be their own country, so it also sort of makes a big difference. It's really just a question of who is recognizing who. Now, up until the late 1990s, South Africa had a relationship with Taiwan. Taiwan was sort of recognized by the old South African regime, and for a while, there was even the new ANC regime actually recognized Taiwan as well. There was some payoffs. The Taiwanese have said that they basically gave the ANC a lot of money for a while. This was in the early 90s already. And this kept them from unrecognizing, from stopping their recognition of Taiwan and moving their recognition over to China. But eventually it did happen. But despite that, the Taiwanese still hold a representation in the country, and they essentially are still operating in the country in a variety of ways. There are Taiwanese nationals that live here, and there's quite a lot of trade that gets done, etc. So you do have a Taiwan presence. But as South Africa has gotten closer and closer to groups like BRICS, and also particularly to China, it has started to take on foreign policy positions that are important to the Chinese. So the classic example, the one that we probably know most about in South Africa, is the issue of Tibet and the fact that South Africa now recognizes what's known as the One China policy, which is basically a way of saying that that Tibet actually is part of China. And so when the Dalai Lama several years ago actually wanted to come to this country, the South African government refused to give him a visa more than once so that he could visit Desmond Tutu's, I think it was Desmond Tutu's birthday at the time or something like that. So that's an example of China flexing its muscles. Now, what we've seen is that since South Africa went to the BRICS summit in Kazan in the last week, we've seen two different positions that have tried to sort of bolster their connection in BRICS and their connection in both Russia and China. And the one was that there's now all of a sudden a push where the South Africans are saying to the office of Taipei that they want them to move from Pretoria, which is the place where sort of capitals are, and they want to downgrade the representation to a trade office and move them to Johannesburg. And that's clearly a push from China to help reduce recognition of the Taiwanese on the continent. But now the Taiwanese have said, no, we don't accept that. We don't think it's correct. And furthermore, if you force us to do this, we're actually going to move your embassy out of Taiwan. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see if South Africa follows on this particular one. I think it also has ramifications for how they might react about the Israeli embassy. We still have an Israeli embassy. It's still functioning, although the ambassador is abroad. And so there's a question around whether whether they would actually decide to push. And there's been some reports actually in some media to say that the Israelis may be considering in advance of this to try and remove their representation from South Africa to Eswatini so that they can operate more effectively. It's not clear where that's going to go, but the Taiwanese discussion is going to be important for where some of this stuff starts to go. There's been quite a lot of pushback. The Americans got very sensitive about China stuff at the moment, understandably. And so the Taiwanese issue is something that comes up. There's a lot of weapons, a lot of people that are going to Taiwan. And it's the sort of move that's calculated to annoy the Americans. And we're starting to see grumblings out of the Senate again about South Africa's conduct. So that's kind of interesting and something that we're going to have to watch. On the flip side, you also saw a spat between the DA and the ANC. By the way, the DA actually pushed back on this Taiwanese thing as well. They said, look, Durko, can't be doing this thing. They need to discuss it properly. And so there is some fighting going on. Interesting to see how that plays out, because you have the same scenario with Russia, where South Africa went to the BRICS summit and said Russia is our ally and our friend. Then the DA came out and said, well, it's not our ally, they're not our friend, and South Africa needs to reset its policy. And then the government is saying, well, you know, the DA is welcome to its policy, but it doesn't have the foreign ministry, and so therefore it can't dictate terms. And then, you had a case where the Home Affairs Minister, who is a DA person, Leon Schreiber, actually issued a statement saying, well, okay, if that's how you're going to play it, we're going to now publicize the fact that there is a visa-free engagement happening between South Africa and Ukraine. And as the Minister of Home Affairs, I'm now like putting it up for the president to sign. So you can see a kind of outline of how these debates are going to start expanding themselves in the GNU, because on the one hand, you've got the government trying to do something at a governmental level, either issue a statement or do something like move the embassy, and you get pushback from the DA inside the GNU, and then it's using its own ministers to sort of drive its own foreign policy agenda, which is not really, it's not like coordinated, and it's probably not ideal. But at the same time, it's also not likely to drop the GNU. I think this is part of a problem where you're going to be finding that there's sort of ways that the parties need to be able to show their public positions on this without breaking the bank, so to speak. And I think this was probably a good first test of the foreign policy discussion and how that is a crack. And I'm sure we will see more of it down the line, particularly at some point there's going to be something Israel-related, I'm sure, that will pop up. And then that really sort of touches the ANC on its studio, so to speak. And so we will have to see what it then does when something Israel-related happens. So that's where we are with Taiwan and Russia, and the dynamic basically, first of all, internationally, and then locally. And of course, the other big driving thing when we're talking about this is the ICJ, South Africa putting forward its memorial, this target that it has on Israel at the moment. So that is something that we sort of need to follow and understand, and part of it is also that's why you're getting a foreign policy discussion, because this is coming up. The government is expecting criticism from a variety of quarters, and so it's using other means to distract in terms of the foreign policy discussion. So that's kind of where we are on this particular question, and we sort of are going to have to see what goes through further. As we go forward in terms of South Africa's foreign policy discussion, in terms of the state. I see here we have a WhatsApp from, I'm sorry, listen, I don't have your name, but you're saying here that I am on the DA side with Taiwan, and it's ironic that the ANC are supporting imperialism, which is exactly the same as what Russia and China are doing. So thank you for Thank you for sending that. Listen, I really appreciate it. Sorry, I don't seem to have your name. It's not showing up. But I do appreciate you sending it in, and I think that that is correct. And if anyone has any other messages in any other way you'd like to chat about this, 0618951019. So back to the discussion. So we have this question of Taiwan, Russia. We've got the ICJ. So that's all happening at the international level. We have this attack on Iran, the other part of this axis. There is a sense in which maybe Iran will relax for a bit. There's suddenly this discussion around hostage negotiations. I think also because Sinwar was killed, so now there's an off ramp to some of this stuff, and so I think that there's maybe an opportunity now for all of this. But that's what's going on the international and the national scene in the country. And what's happened is that this then flows down into the rest of the country, and we find that there is discussions going on in different spaces that are affecting different players in different ways depending on where they find themselves. So let's take the discussion around Mandela and see where he fits into all of this. So Mandela Mandela is a grandson of Nelson Mandela. And for a very long time, he was a parliamentarian, and the parliamentarian, as a parliamentarian, he was probably the most, not just pro-Palestinian, but actually pro-Hamas parliamentarian that there was. And he's been flying all over the world, connecting with some, I think it's fair to say, fairly bad humans, whether it's Hamas or a number of others that they are engaging with, the Houthis and the Hezbollah, whatever, very, very vocal on this question. And he has been going around the world basically abusing the Mandela name to fight against Israel in this way. And he recently tried to go to the UK as part of an anti-Israel tour. And what happened was, because he was a parliamentarian, he had a diplomatic passport. But he hadn't been a parliamentarian because he didn't get back on the list in the last election. And so he was trying to use his diplomatic passport, and he tried to bypass the procedures of the UK in order to get in. And he was flagged for this and blocked from going to see what was going on in the UK and talking at these at this variety of places. So that was number one. So initially the Home Office said, look, he just didn't have the right visa. So now he applied again and to say, well, look, now I want a visa to come and talk. And the Home Office has actually now looked at his record as a speaker in England and South Africa and said, look, your ties to Hamas and many others are actually too close, too problematic. You would be causing hatred and communal issues in our country, and we really have a problem with that. And so they've actually denied him a visa, which has caused something of a bit of a kerfuffle. Some people are a bit annoyed about this, and there's all this old rhetoric about, oh well, you know, the UK thought that Nelson Mandela was a terrorist, and now they think that Mandela Mandela is a terrorist, which is all complete garbage, really. Like, this guy is someone who is on record as being problematic with his wives. There's allegations that he assaulted people, and he was the person who was attacking Miss South Africa when she was going to Israel. So he is someone who is a rabble-rouser and a stirrer and is directly connected to terrorist organizations. And the UK are saying that they have had enough and are barring him from traveling. And so it's some of this... I think because there's actually been a lull, if you like, in some of the fighting and some of the other issues, some of these things are now starting to catch up with people who've been going for a year from place to place supporting Hamas and what they are doing. I mean, we're seeing, for example, Ronnie Casserles at the moment doing a commemoration for Ismail Haniyeh and for Sinwar. So he is... continuing to drive a pro-Hamas narrative, just like he did a year ago when he praised Hamas for the attack on Israel and said it was delightful and amazing, and then had to they had to delete the video because it was so appalling and ridiculous. So that's kind of a very interesting, very very interesting outcome from this debate with Amanda Mandela, sort of using the Mandela name to try and drive his own particular agenda, but because he's gotten out completely supporting these terrorist elements, the UK has blocked him. Now the question is going to be, can you use the UK's denial of visa to then stop him from traveling to Europe? Certainly I don't think that this is a guy who can go to the US. He does spend a lot of time in places like Turkey, Iran, all that sort of thing, so obviously those countries not going to be an issue. But I think it also serves as an important deterrent to people who are looking to engage in this kind of stuff about how they're going to be perceived. And it's going to take us into our next story, which is the question of the gift of the givers, because they are starting to face similar kind of scrutiny. And there's going to be a question about how that operates, because they are a slightly different story. So we're going to move from the issue of Mandla Mandela now to the issue of Imtiaz Suleiman and the gift of the givers, and where they're at, and what are some of the pressure that they're starting to take for their positions. That's the next thing we're going to be discussing as we look at the sort of trickle down of foreign policy into the South African politic, right from the international to the national. And now we're looking at how it's playing out in various institutions. I am Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. Now, have you heard about the amazing opportunity to reach our vibrant Jewish community through 101.9 Chai FM? If you're looking to connect with educated, engaged listeners who value insightful talk radio, then this is your chance. Right now, we're offering advertising spots for only 200 Rand each. That's right, everyone can afford it, but hurry. We have a limited number of deals available. So if you want to make an impact, contact us at info@chaifm.com. Let's get your message out there on Chai FM, broadcasting locally on 101.9 FM and to the world on chaifm.com. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review, and we are looking at the way in which foreign policy debates are breaking out all over South Africa and how the international, national, and local dynamics are driving them and what we are likely to see going forward. So we dealt with Mandla Mandela in the previous discussion, and now we're going to look at the slightly more complicated case of Gift of the Givers and Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman. Now, the thing about Imtiaz Suleiman is that although he actually has an anti-Israel record and quite a considerable one, for many years he was fairly quiet on this issue. He didn't talk about it. Everyone understood there was a sort of Gaza alignment to Gift of the Givers. They, of course, do a lot of good work in South Africa, in different parts of the country, whether that's for flood victims and helping people, whatever. But what was always interesting about them is that they had this reputation for working with terrorist organizations, and that's not that's like not a secret. It's not out there as it's not even an, in fact, in this particular instance, an insult. It's because what they used to do is work with terrorist organizations, and that's how South Africans, they would be the sort of go between for South African hostages that had been taken in the Sahel and by the Taliban and whatever, and they would work with some of these terrorist groups and then sort of often be interlocutors in terms of getting people out. But nonetheless, they had these ties. There were sympathies for the Palestinians, although in the last few years, Imtiaz Suleiman was fairly muted in what he had to say. And then after October 7th, he became a very, very prominent voice in attacking Israel, not humanitarian at all, no condemnation of Hamas, all this sort of thing, and very connected to the sort of food aid issue in Israel. There was some issues with his people who were caught up in strikes by the IDF, which they claimed was attacking humanitarian groups. The IDF claimed that they were too close to Hamas, may have actually been part of their processes. So there was already a sort of a murky relationship that was starting to emerge. And then also on top of that, you had Intias working with international lawyers. There's good reason to think that he may have been part of the ICJ discussion documents. So he came out and also actually what came out against the GNU in the run up to the elections. He made a very forceful statement where he said that he didn't think that the DA should be part of the coalition, didn't like some of the other parties, and actually advocated publicly for the EFF and the MK to be part of it, which I think it was a very interesting thing for someone to go out so publicly. And that was another interesting red flag in terms of how he was kind of conducting his videos and public pronouncements. And what's happened, I think, is that all of these sorts of things started to get him a lot more public scrutiny. And as a result, what has happened is that over the last while, the information has been picked up, things that he has said, troubling anti-Semitic things, where he's sort of used code word Zionist instead of Jew to try and talk about people controlling the world with money and fear, and he made that statement. He was in a statement where he said he doesn't follow national laws or international laws, only follows Islamic law, which is kind of interesting. So all of this has been building up, and as a result, an article was written the other day where a former South African now living in Israel, a human rights lawyer, wrote an article in the Times of Israel, sort of putting out Intias Suleiman's connection to the Muslim Brotherhood organizations that operate in South Africa, Al Aska Foundation for one, which has proper ties to terrorist groups, and came up in some of the discussions around how banking entities may very well have been funding terrorist groups in the country. And the reason it came up was because Intias Suleiman was invited to come speak at the Helen Suzman Foundation. Now, the Helen Suzman Foundation doesn't do international stuff very often, but there has been a change of leadership in the institution, including at the executive role and at the board level, where people with strong views on international affairs, anti-Israel views, and anti-Western views, quite frankly, values that had nothing to do with Helen Suzman at all, have now started taking over the organization, and as a result, they invited Intias Suleiman to take part. And this letter basically put out all of the instances in which Intias Suleiman was driving anti-Semitic agendas, in which he has these connections to these terrorist groups. It's not clear. He hasn't denied the connection, but he's kind of said that he's clean and he hasn't been funding Hamas, and that there's been nothing from the authorities to say that he's been funding Hamas. So I think that this will start to open potentially other investigations into his conduct, and he may find himself in a similar way to Mandela on the wrong end of some of the abilities for him to do his work, because he may not be able to travel to certain countries because of his ties to terrorism. Interestingly, it's not even like this is not, it's not, he hasn't denied any of it. He hasn't said, well, any of it is untrue. And in fact, he received an award from someone just a while ago. It was affiliated with Al Aska and Foundation and other Muslim Brotherhood groups, which he accepted and connected with. So he hasn't denied the links. He's kind of saying, well, we didn't fund anyone, and this is the Americans are trying to force their way, blah, blah, blah. So that's interesting. Someone who I think had a fairly good reputation in South Africa is now suddenly coming under additional scrutiny for his role. And so this might be a story that unfolds over quite some time. And it's particularly important because there are a lot of corporate donors who send money to Gift of the Givers. And I think that they are going to start taking a lot of flack and a lot of pushback for their support of an organization such as this, which may have ties to terror groups. So talking of terror groups, we're going to talk about how this is now affecting the university system in South Africa. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
Yeah, now, we've spent the whole show basically going through controversies that are breaking out all over our country in terms of foreign policy. And I'm going to spend the last couple of minutes while we have on the show talking about UCT. Because last week, a very interesting document was put on Politics Web, which I think hadn't been available to South African public before, which basically detailed all the ways in which UCT might lose money by implementing a boycott of Israel, which, of course, you may be aware they currently have in front of the council. And in fact, the council is being sued by academics at the university because of this issue. And what this document from 2019 showed was that particularly international collaborations with the university would cost the university 600 million rand worth of research because they are targeting Israel in this particular way. And that at least 50 students who are on various bursary programs and engagements would also actually be affected by this and may have to drop out of their studies. And yet the university is still taking pressure from inside to show how they are still caving to this kind of pressure. So a German publisher, a group called Bild in Germany, actually was the head of the publishing house was due to speak at UCT, and he was invited by the vice chancellor, but then they kicked up a fuss because his newspapers apparently were too pro-Israel, and so then the university seems to have postponed or cancelled the lecture, and this is very interesting. So we've gone from a boycott, a boycott of Israel and Israeli speakers on UCT to this now extending even to Germans with pro-Israel positions. And this is now causing a big stir at UCT, lots of arguments going on in terms of academic freedom and how that's affecting the university's reputation. And there's a big effect that's going to happen to it going forward. So that's something that we're going to have to watch, as well as that case goes forward and as some of these fights around academic freedom and foreign policy continue to roil the South African body politic. And we will definitely cover it on the show for you so that you are aware. Thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Thank you to everyone who helps make the show possible. Vusi on the sound, Craig pushes all the big red buttons. And to you, dear listener, thank you for joining us every single week. And do join us again next week on the New Blue Review.